The Gospel of John in chapter 14, verse 23 says, Jesus answered him, Those who love me will keep my word, and my Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. Whoever does not love me does not keep my words. And the word that you hear is not mine, but is from the Father who sent me. I've said these things to you while I'm still with you, but the Advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you everything and remind you of all that I've said to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not let them be afraid. You have heard me say to you, I'm going away, and I'm coming to you. If you loved me, you would rejoice that I am going to the Father, because the Father is greater than I. And now I've told you this before it occurs, so that when it does occur, you may believe. I remember the shock of seeing him in the mirror. I liked him. It was the first time. I was 50. Sometime around then, one of my children took a photo of me, the first one I ever liked. I began in those years to value and enjoy life, rather than live occasional days or weeks of distraction and temporary forgetfulness of all the self-hate and alienation. I realized one day that I was at home in the world. I belonged. It was my place. It was good. I was no longer defined by alienation and pain. We forget. We sleep securely in our slavery. Those are words by Carol Etzler. The money inures us a little, buys us some anesthesia. We find others to look down upon, and we forget, or do not begin to see, just how much we are driven by the world and what it's done to us. But every so often, the Spirit gives us eyes to see. Last week, when I made a dopey mistake, I exclaimed, Oh, Andrew! With an emphasis on the syllables which I had not heard since childhood, I knew the voice at once, and recognized an undefined pain which is still too hard to begin to explore. The world comes into our kitchen and owns us and gives us no peace at all. It only tells us where we must go. We've simply forgotten this most of the time, or become used to it, or not yet woken up. When I saw myself in the mirror that first time, it was not some miracle healing, not a moment which changed everything. It was a moment of recognition that things had been changed. It was the beginning of seeing with a new clarity the peace the world cannot give. It was clarity and recognition of the given / able to be seen that is described in the reality that Jesus' poetry addresses. Those who love me will keep my word, and my Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. Whoever does not love me does not keep my words. There is a consequence of a discipleship which seeks to be obedient to the little amount and the less consequence of follow me, which we understand. There is a consequence of not following, and God gives and graces us regardless. None of it's deserved. None of it can be achieved. We only realize later what has been given, and it can take years to see. Where is my desire? Etzler wrote in her song, Sometimes I wish my eyes hadn't been opened. Just for an hour, how sweet it would be not to be struggling, not to be striving, but just sleep securely in our slavery. I desire freedom. But I know, too, why the voice cried, "Oh, Andrew!" For just now, I'm being offered a slight increase of territory, a new area of freedom, an expanded life. And the world, the not-peace part of me, is reacting with terror. Stay safe. Don't leave. Be careful. Listen to us. You're ours. You belong here. Do as you're told. The mystery is that grace and spirit find our doors opened by the smallest desire for freedom and never tire of waiting. The peace that Jesus leaves and gives is entry into life as it should be. It's the journey into the life God has imagined and desired for the fullness of human living, for all people just the same. A life lived in harmony with all people and with the planet. That is, Jesus' peace is the good, harmonious creation being fulfilled. It is a healing of the wounding caused by human violence. A reality where one can look at the scars of the past and be thankful for and at ease with the gift of our healing, rather than being reminded and re-traumatized by the evils done to us. The peace that Jesus gives is a growing ability to live at home in the world, despite all its current alienation and suffering. An ability, even in the time of terror, to say, "But the creation is good." It is the beginning of the hard-won glory of living a life focused upon the Christ, instead of living a life based in psychological reaction to the pressures around us. This is called free will. Do you understand that the peace the world gives, those fortunate moments of comfort and affluence when war is more distant, that peace is only ever the uncertain faux certainty we get from being a slave who has submitted to the forces around us? Francis Schaeffer used to speak of peace and personal affluence at any cost, and that peace is a slavery. The peace Jesus gives is called living in the resurrection. It is called entering the kingdom of heaven, which is not yet, but which is now. And there's an afterword to this little post. The problem with our culture is that we grant reality to correspondence. That is, there has to be a solid, definable, provable, inverted commas, material reality for something to be real. And so we are programmed, although we mostly don't notice it, to look for the meanings of Western culture in John's Gospel. This is why John is so hard to understand. He is not speaking about our shallow correspondence-based reality. He is speaking of the deeper reality, which we can only approach through contemplation, poetry, art, and the gospel. The reality of living and reflecting upon and desiring, giving ourselves to, that ultimate beauty which can be called glory. So in this week, I cannot explain John 14. I can only witness to the reality of it. I can only say, Yes, I have felt this too. The peace the world cannot give has to be lived rather than understood, or at least lived, before we can begin to describe it. There's also a footnote in the written post which reflects upon that correspondence-based view of reality. Two articles. One is James Barnes, How the Dualism of Descartes Ruined Our Mental Health, and we might see there something about peace in that title. And Barnes said, "But after the bifurcation of mind and nature, an episteme structured around identity and difference came to possess the Western psyche. The episteme that now prevailed was, in Rorty's terms, solely concerned with truth as correspondence and knowledge as accuracy of representations. Psyche as such became essentially introverted and untangled from the world." And then the second article, which I think Barnes refers to actually, is called The Blind Spot, or more fully, The Blind Spot of Science is the Neglect of Lived Experience, and that's posted again at Eon magazine by Adam Frank, Marcello Gleiser and Evan Thompson. And they say, "So the belief that scientific models correspond to how things truly are doesn't follow from the scientific method. Instead, it comes from an ancient impulse, one often found in monotheistic religions, to know the world as it is in itself, as God does. The contention that science reveals a perfectly objective, quote, reality, unquote, is more theological than scientific. Recent philosophers of science, they say, who target such naive realism, argue that science doesn't culminate in a single picture of a theory-independent world. May peace be upon you."